celebration, no celebration, no confrontation. No.
Oh, there's a way to start a show. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 15th of May, and a beautiful day. Well, not weather-wise, but it'll be a nice day. It'll be great because we'll all be together. We'll be talking about stuff, and we just heard from the Muppets Green album, and we're doing that because tomorrow marks the 30th anniversary of the loss of one of the great creators of our time, Jim Henson, who passed away 30 years ago. Who created the Muppets, and we're going to be talking to his best friend and a person who worked with him from the very beginning, Frank Oz, and he'll be on coming up at 11 o'clock. So we look forward to that, and we'll be hearing some Muppet tunes this morning. We have a great panel and a lot to talk about, so let's get going. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you?
I'm just ducky. I was out.
Ducky.
I was
yeah,
out.
That's what's
I was
good.
Out
rubber,
in the,
rubber ducky, as it were. Yes.
I was out after the. I was out after the rain this morning. I walked for an hour and a half, and it was really lovely. Nice day. We're finally getting where we need to be temperature wise, and I am very grateful not only to nature but also to all those people who gave money in the fund drive, and it's been quite a week.
It sure has. It has been quite a week, and it'll be quite a weekend to unload all that, and we look forward to it. But thanks to everybody, of course. We also are thrilled to have with us this morning the incredible Judith Eng, senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, former EPA regional administrator. Good morning, Judith. How are you?
Good morning, and I love the Muppets. I can't wait to hear that interview.
Oh, you're welcome.
I don't think the Muppets would be good at social distancing, though.
No, and those performers, we were actually talking about that. Those performers were in like little tiny pits together on top of each other while they were doing all that stuff. It's really incredible. But you know, we're all going to figure out new ways of doing what we've always done. We'll have to, won't we? Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. It's been a little while since Jen's been on the program, so it's a pleasure to welcome her back. Hello, Jen.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be back, and I'm also looking forward. I'm such a Jim Henson fan and that whole crew. And I will say it's really interesting to watch on Netflix The Dark Crystal while there's this pandemic going on. There are a lot of parallels, and I'm pretty sure the administration feels like a bunch of Skeksis.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jen. Oh, man. And isn't that good? Oh, it's so good.
So good.
Great stuff. We also are pleased to have with us C.G. Dodds. She is an assistant professor at Albany Law School and our good friend. And good morning, C.G. How are you?
Good morning, good morning, good morning. I thought I was the only extreme Muppet fan. Miss Piggy's my alter ego.
Well, it's quite a legacy. So, and we certainly talked to Frank Oz about his creation of Miss Piggy. All right, let's get to the news and what's happening, and there is a lot happening, so we'll talk about it. We begin with the ousted vaccine official who testified that the country still lacks a master plan amid the pandemic. I don't think for the people on this telephone call anyway, or on this program, any big surprises in what Rick Bright had to say, but this former U.S. vaccine official and an executive of a medical mask maker in Texas each told Congress on Thursday they believe lives were lost because of missteps by the Trump administration in its early handling of the coronavirus pandemic. Rick Bright, who filed a whistleblower complaint after he was removed from a senior post at the Department of Health and Human Services last month, said his superiors dismissed urgent warnings in January and early February about an impending shortage of N95 respirator masks. Bright also said the administration delayed potential work on a U.S.-made vaccine by not acting fast enough or forcefully enough to press China for samples of the virus. And Bright said his removal showcased how generally politics overtook science as President Trump took center stage in responding to the U.S. crisis. One more paragraph, and then we'll get to it here. This from the Washington Post. Bright alleged he was reassigned to a lesser post and locked out of his email account as director of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority after pushing back against plans for the government to invest in unproven COVID-19 treatments, such as the antimalarial drug hydroxychloroquine, the therapeutic that Trump touted largely has been abandoned by the government as trials since showed it can cause heart problems and other side effects in COVID-19 patients. Bright went further, painting a bleak picture of the United States government's ability going forward to manage a second wave of the virus if one coincides with the country's winter flu season. Alan, as I mentioned, no huge surprises because there's a lot of this is what we've been fearing. But to have this whistleblower say all of this confirms what we were worried about.
That's right, Joe. As I said earlier this morning, you know, when the history books are written and the heroes are listed, Bright's going to be right up there. Told the truth, spoke truth to power, did what he had to do. It may seem easy for people to think that you can do that when you have a job, but you can't, but it isn't. And it took real guts. He did it, and you got to give him a lot of credit for it. There's nothing that he said that we didn't know. We knew it all. Nevertheless, the fact that he said it just adds more substance. And, you know, to me, the big issue is how are those Republican voters who in polls say I'm with Trump no matter what, how do they do that? How do they stay there? This is where the great democracy that America is goes into big, big trouble, because we have seen this in societies in the 1930s and others where somebody based on hate and, you know, malfeasance and the rest gets the approbation of folks and of a large part of the country, in this case about 30%. It's unbelievable to me.
And CG, what really I find so interesting is that you have this top U.S. vaccine official who gets fired, goes before Congress, tells his story, and then on the same day the president says, well, testing is overrated. So how do you come to terms with that as we look at where we are currently in this epidemic?
Well, I think it's pretty much consistent with what Trump has always done, which is lie. He's a liar. He's a blatant liar. He's aware of everything that's happening. He's focusing on the economy because he's focusing on the election. One thing that I found to be very interesting is that at no point in Trump's response to Bright's testimony did he say, you're lying.
Right.
He just launched ad hominem attacks at him, and so did other members of his administration. But no one came out and said, you are lying. What you are saying is untrue. And to me, that speaks volumes. All of us already knew that they completely botched this thing and they're completely unprepared and that we're going at this alone. But it's very telling that no one said you lied.
Jen Smith.
Yeah, I think, the questions that I have after hearing all this, again, no surprises here, but it reinforces how negligent this administration is with, you know, ignoring good information and important information. I think between the Bright testimony, between the declined CDC guidelines, things like the new Operation Warp Speed, this race to put their own brand and stamp on the response to this pandemic, which if you look at the White House guidelines, they're quite different than what the CDC is saying, and it's going to be a problem. And we're also ignoring what's happening around the world. We have France that's reopened schools, looking at what's happening in Israel and all the problems that go with it. And I think Bright is absolutely right that this country is underprepared right now.
And Judith, I'm just looking at what came over just a moment ago, where the president is expected to have an announcement at noon today Kellyanne Conway says it's an announcement on a vaccine development. Just given what I read and what we've been talking about, I mean, I don't even know how to take news like that from this, where we are right now and in this administration.
Well, I think the best thing is to ignore it. Nothing they've said in the past has proved to be accurate or helpful. I mean, we are in the midst of a mass casualty event. Over 80,000 Americans have died, and so many more are suffering just on the health side. And then the economic damage will certainly affect health. I thought what Bright said yesterday, a lot of it was what we expected, and not looking back, but looking forward. I thought, you know, Bright made it very clear that there's no national strategy to provide and distribute a vaccine. That is the only real hope for things getting back to, quote, normal, is a reliable vaccine. He said one company can't do it, so Trump will probably trot out one company that he is coerced to say something far more rosy than it is. The other thing that Dr. Bright said was that for healthcare workers using PPE, it's only 30% effective because there was not quality control in place. These things matter. And, you know, the president is constantly trying to divide us, make up rosy comments. He's still talking about hydroxychloroquine. He's the only one. Even Fox has abandoned that. So I desperately want the national media to cover this as a medical issue and not so much as a political issue. Of course, the politics are important, but we get like 75% political coverage, 25% medical coverage, and that should be flipped.
Well, that's hard to do, Alan, isn't it, when you're sidelining all of your medical people?
Yeah. You know, what's so fascinating here is the president says one thing, and his top people, Fauci, the CDC, and others are saying something else. Now, how did we get into that situation? In other words, what is this dual approach that the top people in the Trump administration contradict what he has to say, and somehow they get away with that? Do you understand what I'm saying, Joe?
Absolutely.
It's a very tough one. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know how you get away with it, and I don't know. I mean, to Judith's point earlier, how do you think, CG, when the American people start thinking about this, and even looking at Bright's testimony yesterday, it seems as though it was bungled. This whole response to this pandemic was bungled from the very beginning, almost at every turn. That when that, to use Judith's words, you know, when does that matter? When does that really come home to matter and have an effect on how we go forward?
It's one of those things where you would hope that logic would rule the day and that people would take, you know, of course, note of this and say, okay, he's obviously bungled this entire thing. We've had 80,000 plus lives that have been lost, more than in wars even. And so they would vote accordingly. But I am not confident that the diehard Trumpers will actually take this into account when it comes to voting. I'm not confident that they're going to figure out a way to blame it on someone or something else, and say that it's not Trump's fault, or even go as far as to say that he handled this appropriately. If we were to look just at the Obamagate scandal that he's perpetuating right now, it shows that he's tried to pivot away from his responsibility for the mass casualty, as one of the other panelists stated. He's attempting to pivot away from that. And so if he can successfully pivot away from that, it'll give his voters something else to grasp onto and say, this is the reason that I'm voting for Trump.
CG, I have to say that the thing that is so puzzling to me is exactly what you put your finger on. You have this group of people who are saying, I'm sticking with him no matter what. I can watch the experts. I can say, I can hear that we're being killed that because of this president's actions. But I keep coming back to, what is it that makes those folks who are such profound Trumpers stay with it? And the only thing I keep coming back to is blatant racism. That's what it's been from the very beginning. This guy has been able to transmit to his troops the idea that blacks, browns should not be, getting the kind of appropriate part of the national consensus that they have. I think that's the only way I can understand it.
Well, and I also think that in his own way, he's trying to tap back into that sentiment with his recent attacks on Obama, because if you really were to look at it, he's attacking the legitimacy of everything that this president has done. And now by saying that Obama sought to completely, disrupt his election and saying that he's no longer a legitimate president, he's essentially going back to that birtherism playbook and saying that here we have an issue with this particular president and let's haul him in front of Congress. And because he's tapping back into that racist sentiment, I agree with you, Alan. I think that that is a core reason why people continue to vote for him. And I think that some people have dug in their heels on this and they don't want to admit that they're wrong and they'd rather cut their nose to spite their face.
And yet, did you see Mitch McConnell yesterday?
Yeah.
Now, yeah. you want to talk about that for just a second?
Yeah, actually, I want to get, when we come back, we have to take a break, but we'll talk about Mitch McConnell, and then I would like to get into the Obama story, too, a little bit further as well. So stay right where you are. We'll be right back. We're going to take a break. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Judith Henk, Jen Smith, C.G. Dodds, Alan Chartok, right after this.
Hey, Mr. Bassman, you've got that certain something. Hey, Mr. Bassman, you set that music thumping. To you, it's easy when you go 1, 2, 3, ba 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 ba.
What you mean, ba 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 ba?
Yes, hey, Mr. Bassman, you're on all songs with a ba 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 boom boom and a ba 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 boom 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 bum. Hey, Mr. Bassman, you're the hidden king of rock and roll, ba 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 boom.
No, no, ba 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 ba.
Oh, well, it don't mean a thing when the leader's singing. When he goes, I, ay, 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 ay. Hey, Mr. Bassman, I'm asking just one thing. Will you please teach me? Yes, the way you sing, cause Mr. Bassman, I wanna be a bassman too.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Jen Smith, C.G. Dodds on this Friday morning, the 15th of May. So what we were talking about right before the break was comments made by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who admitted he was wrong when he said that the Obama administration never left a plan for President Donald Trump on how to handle a pandemic. Quote, I was wrong. They did leave behind a plan, so I clearly made a mistake in that regard, McConnell said in a Thursday evening interview with Fox News's Bret Baier when asked about his initial comments. McConnell added, as to whether or not the plan was followed and who's the critic and all the rest, I don't have any observation about that because I don't know enough about the details of that.
So the question then, Joe, is how come this very strange guy, and I believe evil, decided he had to come clean on this. What was it that made him say, okay, there was a plan and I was wrong? Very untypical for him. So there's got to be a reason, right? And the best thing I can think of is that he's in a very close election. I saw one poll, it was quite a while back, that showed a 1-point difference, him leading his opponent in Kentucky by 1 point. He may think that this was a spoiler for him. I don't know.
You know, Ben Rhodes, who is Ben Rhodes, who is a former Obama advisor, said the maddening thing is that Obama left them a White House office for pandemics, a literal playbook, a cabinet-level exercise, and a global infrastructure to deal with something like this. Judith, was that you? Is that, were you going to jump in?
Yep, that was me. Three things. One is amymcgrath.com, who's running against McConnell. Second, McConnell not only misstated that there was no playbook left behind, but the rest of what he said was that Obama should keep his mouth shut, and he did not apologize for that. And then yesterday, the president's 45th new press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, had a very bizarre moment. She, by the way, was a big proponent of the racist theory on birtherism with President Obama. She actually held up the Obama plan and stated how many pages it was, and then held up a binder, a plastic binder, with the Trump plan that was prepared in an after-action report, and essentially was saying, see, you know, our plan is in a binder. And if that was their plan to get us to over 80,000 deaths, I mean, I don't think they should be touting their plan. It's a terrible plan. So I think this is all kind of a setup for this bizarre Obamagate narrative that's coming. And if you watched Fox News 2 days ago, you wouldn't know there was a health emergency. All of their coverage is on the so-called Obamagate issue. And then finally, the only thing McConnell cares about is getting himself reelected, keeping the majority in the Senate, and getting as many very, very conservative judges appointed before he leaves office, if he leaves the majority or leaves office.
I am not familiar with the polling outlets in Kentucky, so I will say I just give these numbers. But the last poll that was taken in the month of April, that was done by Change Research Poll, shows McGrath and McConnell deadlocked at 41%. So
and a spoiler in there.
Yeah.
So
it's, I don't know about that. It's interesting. Okay.
And I
go ahead, Jen.
You know, I think it's you know, every move that you know, we're seeing and watching, especially on primetime news, is really political. But I think the things, you know, both with the White House press secretary and Mitch McConnell, you know, the White House press secretary said that the Obama plan was insufficient, and McConnell said, as you quoted, that he didn't know enough about the plan. And I think that was the problem, is that you know, the plans were never compared or really divulged to anyone. And I think, you know, from a bigger picture standpoint too, this administration, but also this country, between federal and state responses, have proven, you can look at the history, that we're really challenged. There is a big deficit when it comes to responding to even natural disasters. There are things, you know, we see what's going on in Michigan, and, you know, that has a lot of history to it with, you know, what happened with Flint and the fact that the government's cut off funding to sustain people through what is going on and what their basic needs are. And I think that's going to be compounded if there is no strong response and a long-term and a short-term plan moving forward.
So, Jen, does that hurt McConnell in Kentucky, where you have an absolute, can you believe that? In Republican Kentucky, you have this, you know, 41-41 split right now. Now, I don't think McConnell can lose, but if he does...
Does it hurt? No, but I think it will be influenced. I think we've seen with a lot of what are seen as localized elections that there's much more outside influence than ever before, and I don't think that can be ignored.
What do you mean outside influence?
You know, I think there's people from our states, from, you know, Massachusetts to New York, where people are going to, you know, have their ads and social media posts saying this is happening in Kentucky, this is happening in Ohio, this is happening in Michigan, to combat those issues. So, you know, I think, again, we can't look at politics and political action in quite the same way anymore, and I think that's going to become more apparent as we get closer to November.
I want to get back to this just to give it a little bit of context, and that the idea of Obamagate. This from the New York Times: President Trump has embarked on an aggressive new drive to rewrite the narrative of the Russia investigation by making dark and unsubstantiated accusations that former President Barack Obama masterminded a sinister plot to bring him down. On Twitter, on television, in the Rose Garden, and even on an official White House social media page, Mr. Trump in recent days has taken aim at his most recent predecessor in a way that no sitting president has in modern times, accusing Mr. Obama of undefined and unspecified crimes under the vague but politically charged catchphrase Obamagate. The president went even further on Thursday by demanding that Mr. Obama be hauled before the Senate to testify about the biggest political crime and scandal in the history of the United States of America, a scenario that itself has no precise precedent in American history. Within hours, Mr. Trump's most faithful Republican ally in the Senate promptly announced that he would indeed investigate, although he would probably not summon Mr. Obama. In flinging incendiary charges at his predecessor, Mr. Trump has offered no evidence and has not even specified what, quote-unquote, crime he was accusing the former president of committing. Instead, Mr. Trump seemed to be tying the investigation by the special counsel Robert Mueller, which has enraged him for years, back to Mr. Obama, while hinting ominously at forthcoming revelations that will bolster his claims.
And Joe, looking at the reporter who asked the question and saying, you know what his crime is. You know what his crime is. Everybody knows what his crime is. What a liar.
Yeah. CG, what do you make of this? I'm sorry.
It just sounds like even though the language that he was using, it just sounds like, you know, it's a distraction of desperation that definitely takes away from a lot of bigger issues that are happening right now.
Like 85,000 people dying.
85,000 people dying and many more people dying across the country right now. There's, I know we've been talking about crime and other, you know, needs that are happening that are not being met, that, you know, we're not addressing racism the way that it needs to be in this country. And again, it's by focusing it on one person and monopolizing airtime with that, you know, it's setting very dangerous ground.
So, CG, I'm interested because obviously this focus allows him to try to turn the tables on his accusers by making them out to be the ones who are corrupt. Does it work?
I think it depends on what do you mean by work. Do you mean, are you referencing it in a legal standpoint or in a political standpoint?
Well,
because I think that from a political standpoint, I'm sorry, I answered my own question.
Yeah, I want you to answer your own question. That takes the onus off me. Go for it. Answer whatever you want.
From a political standpoint, I think it works because, again, it goes back to the blind support, the blind loyalty for Trump. And that's exactly what he's trying to do. This is the equivalent of the lock her up campaign.
Right.
Right. This is going to be what he stands on for the election in the fall. From a legal standpoint, how are you holding hearings about something and we don't even know what the something is? There has been no specific.
But it's really bad.
Identified and this whole, you know, I go back to this reality show, and next after the break we're going to disclose what, when you really have something you come out with it, you don't
right.
just sort of do these sort of teases that he's doing. And maybe he's trying to buy time to kind of come up with something, but one thing I don't want us to do is I don't want us to be dismissive of this is, oh, this is dumb, this is stupid, this is just Trump doing what he does. Because as we have seen throughout his presidency, there are very real ramifications for his actions. And while we may be dismissive of something as this is a nothing burger, He can draw out this nothing burger into something that is catastrophic for this country.
You know, I think that's such a great point, because we so often hear on this program people say, oh, well, you took the bait. The president is just trying to divert your attention away from coronavirus. He's looking to divert your attention away from the record unemployment that this country has seen, that this country is darn near in a depression at the moment, and you took the bait. But you make a great point that you do have to pay attention to it, because it does and could have devastating consequences.
Well, Joe, one other thing that we should consider here. Yeah, I think CG is exactly right. The base, he keeps throwing it to the base, and the base responds as always, you know, as Hitler's base did back in the day. Nevertheless, there is a middle class. There is a purple group. There are people who really say, oh, no, this is just too much. And you know what? He sort of blew it all, because he's done it too much, and he doesn't have the credibility with a lot of these people that he once had. And nobody is laughing right now. That's my sense of it is that this is a sort of pathetic exercise, and that it will not work with the people who will make that 5% difference as to whether he wins or loses.
So you're saying you can do it one too many times. You can play that hand.
Yeah, I think he did it. Yeah.
And the fact is that people are dying. And to your point, Alan, about that purple group, that's where you draw the line, right? There are thousands of people dying every day. And so for this to come up, it's like, really, is this what you really want to talk about? And I think for most people, you get to that line where enough is enough. And for that purple group, I think this is where the line is.
And what makes the difference is, to that purple group, I could die as a result of this.
Right.
It's not some theoretical thing. You know, I got to stay in my house, and I got to keep a mask on when I go to the supermarket, and I got to do all of that. And the economy stinks, and I lost my job. I don't see it. I don't see how he can win.
I was so struck, Alan, by your conversation with the governor yesterday when he was saying, well, look, you know, we can have this argument, but it seems to be a much different argument when people talk about their kids and going to school.
Yeah,
it really is sobering. We're going to take a break when we come back.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, we're going to take a break when we come back. We have a lot of letters from listeners. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to some other topics. Great panel today. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Jen Smith, and C.G. Dodds. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
You can't live with them, and you can't live without them. Something irresistible-ish about them. We grin and bear it, cause the nights are long. But I hope that something better comes along. It's no good complaining, it's pointless to holler. If she's a beauty, then she'll get underneath your collar. If she made a monkey out of old King Kong, man, I hope that something better comes along. Ah, but what could be better than a saucy Irish setter when puppy love comes on strong? Or a collie that's classy, a laddie needs a lassie, a lover and a wife gives you a new leash on. Don't mean to scare you, my friend, but I bet.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Before we take the top of the hour break, get to as many letters as we possibly can. And panelists, just jump in when you have anything to say about what our letter writers have on their mind. This one is specific for Judith, even though they admit that the we're going to get to that one in a minute. We're going to talk about perchlorate in a minute. So I apologize. Stacy writes, there are three reasons diehard Trumpers won't abandon Trump. Racism, I agree with Alan, misogyny, and three, they would have to admit that they were and are wrong. That from Stacy. We go to Janet, who says, Alan raises the question of why Trump supporters stick with him no matter what. I suggest he and anybody else with the same question read Arlie Hochschild's important book, Strangers in Their Own Land. We have had Arlie on the program, and she's amazing, and that book should be required reading. It's impossible to understand from the ivory tower bubble so many East and West Coast liberals live inside. Okay, that's mean, but all right. Hochschild spent 10 years visiting with and interviewing her subjects. Her book is very revealing, and I would agree with that. Okay. We go to Ross, who says, now that the president has said that we'd be better off without so much testing since we'd find fewer cases, the question arises of how long will we wait for the Trump supporters to figure out that their guy is a fraud? How long can this go on? Well,
years.
Yeah, I don't. Another 4 years is how long it can go on. My husband and I, says Heather, have the dubious pleasure of being surrounded by a family of mostly Trump supporters. In my estimation, they seem to follow him almost like a messiah-type character. They only watch Fox News, and the rest of the media is lying and attacking the president. As much as I'd like to have Allen's conviction that he will be voted out in November, I'm afraid that if our voters don't turn out in force, his voters will turn out for him no matter what and may give him another 4 years. Can you help put Heather's worries to rest, Allen?
No, I mean, I just think that if the people who want Trump out of office aren't motivated, A, shame on them. But B, I don't understand anything about politics. I really don't. To me, this has been the most horrific, nightmarish, potentially almost unbelievable presidency ever. And if people don't vote now, wow.
Yeah.
But there will be major voter suppression orchestrated by the Republicans. Things
we
know about, like starving the post office, which runs out of money in September, and then things we will never know about, the more traditional, horrible voter suppression. And they're going to, you know, they are smart at voter suppression. They will do it in the states that matter and in the swing districts that matter. And I think, Alan, you're right. People will come out, literally. Their lives are on the line. But I think we're going to see an unprecedented effort not to postpone the election, like Jared Kushner was speculating the other day. But it's going to be more subtle, and it's going to be an attempt to make sure that traditional Democratic districts make it as hard as possible for people to vote.
By the way, you're absolutely right.
Peter has been thinking about what we said about asking the question of why Trump voters stick with Trump, and he has an answer. Trump is not a good person. Hillary is worse. That takes care of 2016. Biden is a doddering moron. He's also always been a moron. Now he's senile on top of being stupid. That takes care of 2020. On the issues, border security, deregulation, lower taxes, taking on China, killing terrorists, all fine with me, says Peter.
So we read his letter.
Okay, we go to Jay, who says, Alan, I'll tell you why people continue to support President Trump. It's because you, the media, and the liberal leftists continue to call them names like racists. Shame on you. You just did the same thing a racist does by generalizing a stereotype to call a whole group of people, and just because they don't agree with your political point of view, I'm not a racist, and you owe me and all the other Trump supporters an apology. Shame on you. Okay, aside from the name calling, the idea, isn't it hard to say that what's being done now with this quote unquote Obamagate, what was done with birtherism, I don't know how you don't see that as racist.
There will be no apology from me for this fellow or person. I can tell you that as a political scientist, I have to find rationale. I have to find the reason why things are happening. Now, you have a president who is a disgrace. Everybody knows he's a disgrace. He's a liar. He has led this country into a terrible place. We have the worst economy ever. We have all of this. So there's got to be a reason. I have come up with a reason. If you don't like it, I suggest you join the lumpen proletariat and lump it.
CG.
I'll just say a hit dog will holler. That's a saying we have in the South. Meaning, you wrote that letter because there's something about it that rings true in your soul. All right. And I will not apologize for saying that if you voted for Trump, you're a racist. If you align yourself with racists, you are a racist. If you support a racist, you are a racist. If you have no problem with racism and seeing people being treated unequally and seeing people being shot down in the streets, and yet you have a president who goes on TV and says there are very fine people on both sides, you're a racist. If you don't like it, don't hang out with racists.
And join the love of bullets.
Beautifully said.
That was beautifully,
beautifully said.
That was indeed. Jim yells at us too. He says, "You guys just don't get it. People support Trump because you don't. It is tribal. They believe the media is making it up, and you are a part of it. You are in your camp. They are in their camp. They do not see themselves as stupid or racist."
By the way, that's right. He's right about one thing. It is tribal.
Yes, tribal. It is tribal.
And of that, there is no question. But what is the motivation for being in one tribe or another? And as CG has just put it so well, the racism is a big part of it.
Yeah, and I think honestly, to the folks, you know, the folks who are aligning, you know, with one camp or another, you know, these issues were things that they were decrying and bringing up well before this election. You know, even when Obama was campaigning, I'm sure the same folks who were against him running in the first place, and now they just have someone to align with, as Ben said.
We have time for just a few more letters, so we'll get to those. We go to Norm, who says CDC has $6.6 billion budget. For this use of our tax dollars, we get a set of elementary school level flashcards telling us to wash our hands. They will not release the full report. Trump must figure we don't know how to read and make decisions. This is what Trump thinks of the American people. And 86,500 American citizens have died for a lack of a national plan. If Trump sees himself as a war president, how about bringing him up on war crimes? That from Norm. Then we go to Joel, who says it's not conservative judges. They are so determined to have dominate the federal judiciary. It's unqualified, hyperpartisan, incompetent ideologues with a very definite component of blatant racism in their character. It isn't just conservative. That is the problem. Bob says CG is on spot about the distraction and present tactics being used by a scared white racist. And Reed says the assertion made by the panel members regarding the chief motivation behind the support of this administration is the correct one. However, I'd like to posit that it is really part of a larger war against certain demographics. To test this, ask one of said supporters the next chance you get if he or she believes that every citizen of voting age should be able to cast a ballot by mail. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll move on to other topics. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Jen Smith, and C.G. Dodds on the panel this morning. We'll continue after this.
We're closer now than ever before.
How much alike we are. Perhaps we're long lost brothers.
There's love in our world and we're showing it more.
We even think the same. You know there may be others.
Our world says welcome, stranger. Everybody's a friend.
We can always use a friend.
Favorite stories to
in our world.
Some say our world is getting...
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Jen Smith, and C.G. Dodds. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We got a letter from Bill who says, hello, non-racist panel. As to one of your most recent letters, anyone who feels they need to say I'm not a racist is definitely a racist. As a gay man, it's the same as hearing from a so-called friend, I have nothing against gay people. Really? Question mark. We also got this from...
And they say, and I have friends who are gay.
Yes. Yes, the friend.
At least one
Peter,
that I know.
Peter says, quit whining like your leader and accept who you are and what your leader is. You can rationalize your support for this tyrant as much as you like, but in the end, it will not matter. You and your corrupt president will end up on the trash heap of American history. Quit whining and wear your damn masks. I added the word damn, and I don't know why. I guess just for flourish.
It's a public health initiative.
Thank you very much. All right. Good morning, and we welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Oh, I forgot one. This one from John. You may be a good person, but you seem to have forgotten that the definition of racist isn't bad person. Racism is a believing that you or your group are naturally superior to another group based on skin color, based on a bunch of lies about the other group. I'll let the panel list those lies. What's that? You protest that you weren't raised like that? Yeah? No. Racism in America is like Pomalov. You're soaking in it. So you're absorbing it. I'm absorbing it. Alan is absorbing it. Joe is absorbing it. But at least Alan and Joe actively try and clean it off of ourselves. All right. That was very nice from John. We go to other topics this morning. Let us talk about... I know. Somebody else has stepped aside. Senator Richard Burr is stepping aside as Intelligence Committee Chair. Why, you ask? Well, it's amid an FBI investigation of the senator's stock sales. A burgeoning insider trader investigation scrutinizing members of the U.S. Senate, led by the chairman of its Intelligence Committee, Richard Burr, to step down Thursday after FBI agents seized his cell phone seeking evidence related to stock sales he made before the coronavirus pandemic crashed global markets. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, in a statement, said that Burr, a North Carolina Republican, informed him Thursday of his decision to step aside as committee chairman during the pendency of the investigation. The two agreed. McConnell added that this decision would be in the best interest of the committee and was to take effect on Friday. Also Thursday.
Sounds to me like they got him, because otherwise he wouldn't be stepping aside, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
So meanwhile, you also have aides to Senators Dianne Feinstein of California, Democrat, and Kelly Loeffler, a Republican of Georgia, who acknowledged that the senators had been in contact with federal law enforcement. Feinstein has been questioned by FBI agents, yep, about stock sales, which she has said were done by her husband and without her knowledge. A spokesperson said Loeffler's office acknowledged she had turned over documents related to stock sales she says she did not actively participate in. Judith.
Well, I think Alan's right. Burr knows that he's in trouble. He will not be seeking re-election in 2022, right, when his term expires. I wouldn't be surprised if he just, threw in the towel. He will look at the political calendar and make sure that his allies can name a replacement. He'll do whatever he can to make sure that North Carolina's seat is held in Republican hands. But it's, in any other time, this would be front page news. Now it's just a little PS. I think Kelly Loeffler, on the other hand, just got elected to the Senate. I think she's in an equal amount of trouble. And so her political career mercifully may be cut short. It is unusual for the FBI to show up at a sitting U.S. senator's house and say, hand me your cell phone. And that's what happened earlier this week, according to a scoop in the LA Times. I think anything that helps flip the Senate to Democratic control will be helpful, but certainly No one can say that Bill Barr and this Justice Department had any, partisan concerns when they went after Barr. This may be the one and only actual legitimate thing that they've done all year.
To your point, Alan, when they go in and they get your cell phone and then you just say, okay, I'm done, pretty much gives you a sense that maybe there was something there that you...
Well, you know, first of all, there are a couple of things here that we have to examine. One of them is, do we really think that the American people are going to think something was wrong here? You know, it was wrong. There's no question. Don't misinterpret me.
Right.
But, you know, would I have done the same thing they are saying to themselves if I had that? Now, Alan wouldn't have, because Alan knows you don't do anything wrong because it's going to bite you in the posterior. You shouldn't do it if it's, and the real reason you shouldn't do it is because it's wrong. Nevertheless, one wonders whether or not it will have that impact. We just saw a special election out in California in which the Democrat in a Democratic district lost.
Right.
And people wonder why that happened. Well, in that case, the congresswoman who was there was accused of having involved herself in, sexual escapades, as I remember the whole story, and I don't remember it that well. And the voters wanted to say, you can't do this kind of thing, so we're going to vote against the Democrat. We're going to vote against the Democrat, and we're going to elect a Republican. Because there are a lot of Republicans who think that that was a handwriting on the wall, that the Republicans are coming back hard. I don't think so.
Well, back to Burr for a minute. What really needs to happen is policy reform now. There are bills in Congress that it used to be championed by the wonderful, now deceased House member Louise Slaughter from Rochester. She pushed really hard not to allow members of Congress to hold stock so they wouldn't do what is alleged that Burr and Laughlin and to a lesser degree Dianne Feinstein has done. I think there's provisions for blind trust, but, you're a sitting member of Congress. You or your family owns a lot of stock in Lockheed Martin, just to use an example, as a big polluter that's pushing to repeal environmental laws. How are you going to vote when Lockheed Martin comes knocking on your door? So I think in more normal times, this could have been a moment to push that change, kind of a post-Watergate reform. But we'll probably miss out on that opportunity, and McConnell would never let it get through anyway. But it should be revisited next year if the Democrats flip the Senate.
Let's go to an environmental story while Judith is up. The Trump administration will not impose any limits on perchlorate, a toxic chemical compound that contaminates water and has been linked to fetal and infant brain damage, according to two EPA agency staff members familiar with the decision. The decision by Andrew Wheeler, the administrator of the EPA, appears to defy a court order that required the agency to establish a safe drinking water standard for the chemical by the end of June. The policy, which acknowledges that exposure to high levels of perchlorate can cause IQ damage, but opts nevertheless not to limit it, could also set a precedent for the regulation of other chemicals, that according to people familiar with the matter. We did get a letter from Leslie who says, even though they admit that the chemical causes brain damage in infants, this vile administration refuses to regulate it. They don't even pretend to care anymore, and yet the base stays loyal. Judith, what has happened to our country?
Well, this is so deeply disturbing, and the letter writer is right. I mean, how low can you go? The science is impeccable on this, which is why the Obama EPA promulgated regulations on this particular chemical. It is, if you're exposed to it through drinking water, which has been documented in 26 states, particularly near military installations, it does cause fetal brain damage and infant brain damage. We've known about this for over 20 years. But the Department of Defense and the aforementioned Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman and other military contractors have liability exposure here. If they're brought to court and it's proven that contaminated drinking water caused these health problems, they would have to pay out a lot of money. So what do? They tie the agency in knots for 20 years. George W. Bush was supposed to do something about this, but decided not to. Obama put a very strong regulation in place in 2011. The Trump administration dragged their heels on it. They actually did put out a proposal to regulate perchlorate, which, by the way, is used, it's an additive to rocket fuel. Supposedly, it makes propellants work better while interfering with the thyroid gland. So the Trump EPA did put out a regulation. It was very weak, but they did put something out. The court ordered them to put something out. And then yesterday, due to amazing reporting by Lisa Friedman at the New York Times, we find that they're just not going to do a regulation at all. EPA is concluding that it is not in the public interest to regulate this chemical. And unfortunately, it is part of a pattern. They've decided last year they're not going to ban the very toxic pesticide chlorpyrifos. They also opted not to ban asbestos. And we are now up to just about 100 major federal environmental regulations that have been rolled back or delayed. One final point is it's going to get worse in the month of May and June, because there is a provision in federal law that says if you change a regulation in the last 6 months of an administration, this is assuming that that President Trump is not reelected, if you make a change in the last 6 months, it gets a much more detailed scrutiny in the following year. So this is going to be a really horrible May and June as the Trump administration rolls out even more deadly regulatory rollbacks. This perchlorate issue is so settled, and for them to do this just increases the incredible health damage that is being inflicted on our country by this administration.
Go ahead.
So, Judith, I do have a question, and that is regarding, you know, states that do have, like Massachusetts, which did set a standard in 2002. So what do you think happens there? And do you think that the states, you know, could regain control by mm-hmm. by setting up their own standards and regulations?
Yes. The states can still regulate on this issue. And we hope that happens also with PFOA chemicals. But there has not been, the volume is just so huge of these rollbacks. There has not been that much state-level rulemaking on the things that the Obama administration is destroying. It's great that Massachusetts has a standard. I think they're one of maybe two states that do.
Can I ask a dumb question, which is, it's taken 3.5 years for these, in many cases, Obama rules to be rolled back. Let's say a Democrat, let's say Joe Biden, wins in November. How long would it take to put them back to where they were?
Well, it will take many years. You have to go through the mechanics of putting everything back in place, and you know there are lists, and then you have to decide, since so much time has passed, do you need to update it in some way? You promulgate the rulemaking. That takes a couple years, and then the affected industry will challenge it in court. During the Obama administration, the agency that was sued the most was the EPA, mostly sued by polluters who didn't want tighter environmental controls. So you definitely would need, to be honest, at least 8 years of a Democratic administration. And I'm not saying that Democratic administrations are perfect on environmental policies, but they are 1,000,000,000% better than the current administration. You'd need 8 years to really put stuff back in place. And then on issues like climate change, you need all hands on deck. We don't have 8 years to effectively address the climate crisis. So, you know, my conservative estimate is getting everything back in place. You've got to pick priorities. You've got to start rulemaking. You have to significantly increase EPA staff. And then there's always, like, you know, a 2-year effective date. So my guess is 8 years.
I asked that question hoping for a more optimistic answer. I'm sorry I asked now.
Sorry.
That really is depressing, and so isn't the role, it?
Yeah, sorry. So
no,
the role
that's
of
right.
the state now even more important. Because, you know, a lot of these regulations, the old versions, all the science is there. It would not be that hard for states that want to be really aggressive on protecting public health to take some of the repealed regs. That works on things like groundwater contamination. It doesn't really work on air pollution and climate change, though. You need a national and international approach.
CG, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, Flint still doesn't have clean water. And the reason I'm saying this is because I think that this, the fact that we're still having debates over proven, scientifically verifiable evidence that contaminants are impacting fetal brain development is indicative of a greater problem in our society. And that is that money rules the day. And oftentimes these grave environmental issues such as pollution impact those who are poor and poor people of color. And therefore, it is not particularly surprising that this is a stance that this particular administration has taken. That being said, I think a lot of presidents have not done their part to ensure that kids aren't subjected to pollutants. And, you know, I see the 8-year time frame, and I can very well see how that works as someone who lived in D.C. for a very long period of time. But I think that we as a society, we need to demand more from our elected officials when it comes to environmental regulations.
The question, of course, is how do you get there? We have all agreed for a long time that the Congress, the people, you know, aren't taking the environmental corruption as seriously as they should, and it's going to lead to death and destruction. And yet, the meter doesn't move. And
well, I think
that
also.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, please. Go ahead.
I think a key part of that is campaign finance reform.
Mm.
I firmly believe that there should be limitations based on who and how much money you can seek in your reelection campaigns. I think that as long as big business has its hands in the pockets of senators and representatives, we're going to continue to have this problem.
Yeah, but CG, there's a problem there, and that is, we all know that as long as the Senate is Republican, that ain't going to change. And by the way, a lot of Democrats got elected under the old rules, too.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you. But I think as far as the environment is concerned, we have to take that step. And I don't know what to do to make people believe in science. I don't know what to do. You know, I've had debates with people about climate change, and it's a hoax. It's this. Okay, well, what is the worst that could come from cleaning up the environment? And no one ever has an answer for that. So I don't know what to do in order to make people believe in science and to believe that we should have clean air and clean water.
Well, you know
what? I was just going to say, when this is all over, this pandemic is over, if it's over, when it's all over, and Judith will be able to speak on this, I know, and so will CG, we're going to find out whether or not more people die. The skies are clearer. I went out this morning in my car to do something for a second, and the traffic was as heavy as it ever was in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. So for a while there, nobody was driving. The skies were clear. The pollutants were less. And maybe, just maybe, there'll be a little bit of evidence put forward about what happened.
That has been my hope, is that people will actually be able to physically see what happens when we are not polluting the environment. But again, that's my hope.
Jen Smith, anything you would like to add?
Yeah, I think it's you know, I think what everyone is saying is true. And, you know, again, I think what I brought up earlier in the show, too, is that there's still a problem of that we're underprepared to handle these issues. We didn't have, again, it was one thing to recognize the issues that were happening in Flint, the issues that were happening, you know, I cover schools. We're talking about public safety, public health, student health. Before the pandemic, students were just worried about getting shot or bullied, and that hasn't gone away at all. Those concerns have not gone away at all. And, you know, we don't have the proper policies and the funding to, you know, create the long-term change. These changes and impacts didn't happen overnight, and nor will the solutions.
We are just a few seconds away here from having to take a break, but I think I have time for a couple of letters, so we'll get to those. And then when we come back, we will go to our final topic for the morning. Charles says, true believers, whether religious or political, cannot be dissuaded from their beliefs as they are part of their essence. No facts, information, or example contrary to their beliefs will be considered and will be dismissed as false.
I don't know that that's true. Let's see what happens in this election. I mean, if people say, okay, enough of this nonsense, and vote this guy out, it'll be proof that if not everybody, that some people can be moved.
Right. You know, Bob wrote this letter, which I think Judith answered, but I'll read it anyway, which is, why would it take a Democratic administration 8 years to undo Republican changes, which were undertaken in much less than 8 years? And I think you, the reason you said, Judith, is because of the lawsuits and the time and the power of these lobbies, right?
Yeah, and also the EPA has been gutted. Many of the very talented senior scientists have left, or there's major layoffs. Remember, we had Scott Pruitt first heading the EPA, and
remember
now we
him?
Have a former coal industry lobbyist, Andrew Wheeler. So they've made it their mission, just like with many other federal agencies, like the State Department, to gut the agency. So it's kind of a shell of its former self.
And
I have a question for you that's been occurring to me really over and over again.
We only have,
you know,
go ahead, 30 seconds.
Okay, you were a yes or no answer. You were a major part of the Obama administration, and suppose they call you up if Joe Biden wins and says, we'd like you to be the secretary in this area. Would you take it?
Maybe.
Oh, that's a good political answer. That's great. All right. We're going to take a break. The last letter that I have to read is from David, who says, I can't believe we've gotten through 3.5 years of the current administration with such a frightening incompetent in the White House. Maybe it's just me, but do any of you feel like these last 6 months have slowed down to a crawl? November can't get here fast enough. I think, David, we feel your pain, right? Isn't it?
Hallelujah.
Oh, the real question very quickly is if he wins, if Obama wins, excuse me, if Trump wins another term and with no holds barred and not having to worry about another election, will it be worse? That's the question.
Well, we will we'll talk about all kinds of other stuff when we come back. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Jen Smith, and C.G. Dodds all on the program this morning. We will continue our conversation after this short break.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday ocean, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judah Thang, Jen Smith, and C.G. Dodds. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. So let us talk about the states a little bit and their response to the coronavirus and this pandemic. The White House threatens to veto a $3 trillion pandemic relief bill, and a study suggests that even talking can propel the droplets that spread the virus. But let's focus first on the states. In February, Ohio is running a $200 million budget surplus. Then the coronavirus pandemic struck, and 2 months later, as tax revenue plummeted and public health expenses skyrocketed, the state was facing a $777 million hole. Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican, ordered immediate cuts to close the gap. He had no choice. The pandemic, Mr. DeWine said, does not exempt from us balancing our budget, which we are legally obligated to do. Ohio is hardly alone. Every state is grappling with a version of the same problem, and all but one, Vermont, have balanced budget laws in place. And for most, the new fiscal year starts on July 1, leaving them desperate for help with just a few weeks to come up with a plan. A coalition of five Democratic governors said on Monday that state and local governments needed $1 trillion in federal relief, or they would be forced to decide between funding public health care programs or laying off teachers, police officers, and other workers. Democrats in Washington have supported those requests, but some Republicans, including President Trump, have suggested that Democratic-controlled states are seeking a bailout for poor decisions that predate the pandemic. Alan, what do you make of all this back and forth?
Well, I have no doubt that Trump and the Republicans are going to have to give in. The question is going to be what their price is to give the states what they need in order to go forward. I think it's just too risky for them right now. So for the Trump people to say no to the states, that they're not going to, because, you know, you're talking about teachers being fired, you're talking about cops,
right?
You're talking about all of those things. And I think Cuomo under no circumstances is going to give in to any of this stuff about raising taxes or doing that, because he knows that the pressure is there and that if he keeps it up, he'll win.
Judith.
Well, just like the Trump administration dithered earlier this year for months and didn't use valuable time to prepare for this national health emergency, Alan's right. He will eventually go along with some funding to state and local governments. It won't be enough, and it will the delay will just cause havoc. Already local governments are furloughing key staff. My heart goes out to teachers who are trying to teach remotely when so many students don't have the technology or the structure to allow for that. So on top of that, teachers, you know, may be facing massive budget cuts and layoffs. I mean, it's just more bedlam and more uncertainty. And I think the only time Trump really pays attention is when the stock market moves. And I think this will affect the stock market if you see massive economic crisis at the state and local level. I mean, I don't know how New York City recovers, for instance. There was an article yesterday, half of the residents say they're not going to go on mass transit. I don't blame them. I would not want to be on a really crowded subway car when the virus is still out there. But if people in New York City don't use mass transit, there's no chance that economy recovers. I'm so concerned about New York City, and they will not get the resources that they need to even come close to a just recovery.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that U.S. sales fell 16.4% in April for the biggest two-month decline on record. Stores are reopening, but many may not survive that. Jen Smith.
Yeah, that's a key point. You know, even if you're lucky enough to go back to work, you know, there's still so many problems, so many deficits, as Judith just lined outlined. Massachusetts, for example, 30% of the population is unemployed right now. Our unemployment rates are astronomical. Again, when I'm talking to schools this week, they're worried, you know, not only that you can't just reopen right away. You need the supplies, the labor to clean things, as budgets are already strained and they're facing personnel cuts, absolutely true. And again, they're going to be ongoing expenses. If we have to keep monitoring this, if there is going to be another surge in the fall, do you have enough sanitary equipment, the people to do it, the staff to actually monitor these results? It's going to be really devastating what the effects are. And again, I think you hear a lot of people talking about now, if you talk to any nonprofit or health or human service agency, how this pandemic has just illuminated the inequities that are existing in communities, the you know, disproportionality of people affected, their jobs affected, their health affected, their environment affected. This all comes into play.
CG Dodds.
I think, of course, I agree with everyone who's already stated their position on this. I think if we're particularly looking at schools, and I'm using schools as an example because there's so many possible collateral consequences to this. The astronomical costs that will be associated with ensuring that there's hospital-grade cleaning, those are all things that states need to account for and that states need to budget for. And I do think that Trump eventually will have to give on this issue, but my concern is with the delay. The delay is going to wreak havoc. I think it's going to exacerbate costs and is going to make this situation way worse than what it actually needs to be. If that delay impacts people in Trump's base, we'll see if that has an impact on his electability. But I am very concerned about the delay, and especially when you're talking about kids who, up until this point, people were saying, oh, they had certain immunities to coronavirus or they weren't impacted the same way. And now we're seeing that Kawasaki disease is presenting and different immunodeficiency diseases are presenting. And so I think that the delay in giving states the funds that they need, it's only going to exacerbate these issues.
And just that idea that the states, as I mentioned, all except for Vermont, they're all dealing with these balanced budget laws. And Alan, what kind of, I mean, those obviously are important. So what do you do?
Well, there isn't anything you can do. I mean, he has a choice. He either has to balance the budget. The states all have the same problem. They're not like the federal government. They can't print all the money they need. They have to. There's some obvious fooling around with the borrowing. Right. Judith knows about this. You know, they have some of the independent commissions doing borrowing and things of that kind. But in the end, he has no choice. Cuomo has no choice. He has to balance the budget. And what's going to happen is either he's going to have to succumb to raise taxes, which I think both the houses, but particularly the assembly, are going to be for, or he has to bite the bullet and tell the educational establishment and others that they're in for it.
Judith, anything on that?
Yes, I think there's been quite a vocal grassroots campaign in New York to get the governor and the state legislature to agree to raise taxes, particularly on high earners, millionaires and billionaires, and there's been real resistance to that. And so if you don't find new revenue, like a stock transfer tax, which Assemblymember Phil Steck and others have been pushing, which I think makes a lot of sense, or just basically having an equitable tax system where I pay the same tax rate as a millionaire and a billionaire does, taxing carbon emissions to drive down greenhouse gas pollution,
all of those things have to be seriously considered, because even if there is a middle class tax increase, it's not going to be enough to get us through these unprecedented choppy waters. In this equation, this analysis is going to have to happen not only at the state level, but local governments, counties and cities and villages are not going to be able to endure this economic storm without new revenue. So it is a time to have all of these revenue raisers seriously considered and not rejected out of hand. For instance, taxing carbon or requiring fossil fuel companies to pay for the damage caused by climate change that may not have been politically palatable 6 months ago, but it sure is now.
Hey, Alan, we're having a little trouble hearing you, so we're just gonna
we're just gonna
disconnect and reconnect. So if you don't hear us for a second, you'll know why, and then as soon as I get the thumbs up, I'll come right back to you. Okay?
It's probably my fault.
No, it's not your fault. No, you sound like Mr. Roboto. It's all good. Okay, hold on, and we'll be right back with you. I promise.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. So, CG, was there anything you wanted to add to what Judith was just saying?
No, nothing else.
Okay.
Well stated, Judith.
How about you, Jen Smith?
With the what? I got distracted.
I know. It's all bad. It's all bad. All right. So let's move on.
Jen, we wanted to know your view of the Muppets.
I'm a Muppet fan at heart. I actually have one of my best friends is a puppeteer, and I have had the honor of meeting Jim Henson's daughter Heather Henson, who curates things like puppet film festivals. Who knew those existed?
I don't know, but we need many of them as we start coming back to normal. Absolutely. Alan, I think you're plugged back in. Is that all right?
How does it sound? Any better?
You sound amazing. You sound great. We were worried about you there for a second.
Well, I am amazing.
You are amazing. Yeah. Yes. It was just a little robotic there for a second. But I think
when I hear Jim Henson's name, I always think of one thing. As a confirmed worrier about my health, let's put it that way. Henson waited too long to go back to go to the doctor. And by the time he got there, he had this infection.
Right.
And that's what done him in. And it's just a great object lesson for so many of us. Hey, if you've got an infection and it looks bad, don't hang around. Get to the doctor. He could still be alive today. We know that.
Yeah, and a young man, and it was died at just 53. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, it was just 30 years ago. 30 years ago tomorrow,
that he
passed away. All right, we are out of time. I just want to thank everybody for being with us, and you're all wonderful. I hope you have a beautiful weekend and have a great time. CG Dodds, thank you very much. Jen Smith,
thank you.
We'll talk soon. And Judith, thank you very much. Alan, a great week.
Muppets rule.
It was a great week, and we take one more opportunity to say thank you to everybody who participated. It was great.
Absolutely. Alan, thank you very much. We'll be back on Monday, and we'll have more show. Alan in the Congressional Corner with somebody right after this. So-